Punjabi Hari. Gopi Janna Balaba Girvarir Hari. Gopi Janna Balaba Girvarir Hari. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Janaranjana Yashoda Nandana Vraja Janaranjana Yamuna Tira Vanacha Yamuna Tira Vanacharya Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parvrajakacharaswati Sita Shri Shimana's Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Samaveda Bhakta Vrindikajai Gaura Premananda. All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Guru. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading today from the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter, canto 11, chapter 22, Elements of Material Creation. We're beginning a new chapter, chapter 22, and we'll be reading the summary and then doing texts 1 through 3. Hopefully we'll have on board soon. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So I'll just go ahead and begin reading the summary in the beginning of chapter 22. Enumeration of the elements of material creation. This chapter enumerates and categorizes the natural elements, explains the difference between the male and female natures, and describes birth and death. There are many opinions concerning the number of material elements, but this difference of opinion, brought by the influence of illusory energy, is not illogical. All of the elements of nature exist everywhere, so the authorities who have accepted the illusory potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead may propose a variety of theories. The insurmountable illusory energy of God is the root cause of their mutually contradictory arguments. There is no difference between the ultimate enjoyer and the supreme controller. To presuppose any distinction between them is senseless. Ordinary knowledge is simply a quality of material nature, not of the soul proper. The raw substance of material nature is designated according to its different phases. In the mode of goodness, it is known as knowledge. In the mode of passion, as activity. And in the mode of darkness, as ignorance. Time is another name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and another name for material propensity is Sutra or Mahatattva. The 25 elements of nature are the Lord, nature, the Mahat, false ego, ether, air, fire, water, earth, and eyes, the ears, the nose, the tongue, the skin, speech, the hands, the feet, the genitals, the anus, the mind, sound, touch, form, taste, and smell. The unmanifest Supreme Personality merely glances at nature. Material nature, which is under the control of the Supreme Lord, then assumes the forms of cause and effect and carries out the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the material world. Even though the Purusha and Prakriti appear non-different through superficial vision, there is an ultimate difference between the two. Material creation is produced from the modes of Prakriti, and its quality is transformation. The living entities who are inimical to the Supreme Personality of Godhead take on and give up various kinds of material bodies through the agency of their own material world work. But those who are ignorant of the self, because of being bewildered by illusion, do not understand this. The mind, which is filled with ideas of fruitive work, simply takes the senses with it from one body to another while the soul follows along. Nevertheless, on account of being totally absorbed in sense gratification, one cannot remember his past existence. Continuing, fortunately, we don't have to cover this all today. The body undergoes 9 stages of manifestation, which are brought about by association with the qualities of material nature. These are impregnation, gestation, birth, childhood, youth, maturity, middle age, old age, and death. From the death of one's father and the birth of one's son, a person can easily comprehend the rise and fall of his own body. The soul, who is the perceiver, is different from this body. But when there is no knowledge of the true facts, the living entity, confused by the objects of sense gratification, achieves his destinations within the cycle of material existence. Thus, the living entity continuously wanders under the spell of material work, taking birth as a sage or a demigod when he is predominated by the mode of goodness. Among the demons are human beings when he is predominantly influenced by the mode of passion, and in the species of ghosts, spirits, or animals when he is predominated by the mode of ignorance. The spirit soul does not engage in enjoyment of sense objects, rather it's the senses that perform this activity. Therefore, the living entity has no actual need for sense gratificatory pleasures. With the exception of those peaceful personalities who have taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and are dedicated to the divine duty of his service, everyone, including so-called learned scholars, is inevitably overcome by the all-powerful material nature. So we have 3 verses together, 1 through 3. We'll do text 1 responsively. Sri Uddhava Vacha Kati Tadvani Vishvesha Sankhyatan Rishabhi Prabho. I think the Y is supposed to lead to the R with a dot, which is actually a vowel, but I really don't know how to say that right. That's what I'm trying to say right. Sankhyatani Rishabhi Prabho. Naivakadasha Panchatrin. And then again, this Y goes on to the other one because they're actually just one verse that's broken to 2. So I think this is how it's done. Naivakadasha Panchatrin. Yata Tvam Iha Sushruma. Sri Uddhava Vacha. Kati Tadvani Vishvesha Sankhyatani Rishabhi Prabho Naivakadasha Panchatrin Yata Yatas Tvam Iha Sushruma Sri Uddhava Vacha Kati Tadvani Vishvesha Sankhyatani Rishabhi Prabho. Naiva kadasya pancha trin. Yata tvam iha shushruma. So let's read the next two verses together. Kechit shad vingshatim prahur apare pancha vingshatim saptaike navashat kechit chatvarye kadashapare kechit saptadasha prahu sodashaike trayodasha etat patvam hi sankhyanam Rishayo yad vivakshaya gayanti prajagayangshma idam no vaktum arhasi. I think I'll just read, since this is very long, I'll just read through the word for word without repeating. Unless you want to channel on. Sri Uddhava vacha, Sri Uddhava said, kati, how many, tatvani, basic elements of creation, vishva isha, O Lord of the universe, Sakyatani have been enumerated, Rishabhi, by great authorities, Prabho, O my master, Nava, nine, God, the individual soul, the Mahatattva, false ego, and five gross elements, Ekadasha, plus 11, the 10 knowledge acquiring and working senses together with the mind, Pancha, plus 5, the subtle forms of sense objects, Trini, plus 3, the modes of goodness, passion, ignorance, making altogether a total of 28, Atta, having stated, Tvam, you, Iha, during your appearance in this world, Shushruma, so I have heard, Kechit, some, Shat Vivangshitim, 26, Prabhu, they say, Apare, others, Pancha Vingshitim, 25, Sapta, 7, AK, some, Nava, 9, Shat, 6, Kechit, some, Kadvari, 4, Ekadasha 11, Apare, still others, Kechit, some, Saptadasha 17, Prahu, say, Sodasha, Shodasha 16, AK, some, Triodasha 13, Etavatam, such calculations, he, indeed, Sakyanam, of the different ways of counting the elements, Rishaya, of the sages, Yat vivakshaya, with the intention of expressing what ideas, gayanti, they have declared, prithak, in various manners, ahyuman, O Supreme Eternal, idam, this, na, to us, vaktum, to explain, arhasi, you should please. Okay. Translation and purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Uddhava inquired, my dear Lord, O Master of the Universe, how many different elements of creation have been enumerated by the great sages? I have heard you personally describe a total of 28. God, the Jiva soul, the Mahatattva, false ego, the five gross elements, the 10 senses and the mind, the five subtle objects of perception, and the three modes of nature. But some authorities say there are 26 elements, while others cite 25 or else 7, 9, 6, 4, or 11, or even others say that there are 17, 16, or 13. We're going to give you a test on all of these afterwards. What did each of these sages have in mind when he calculated the creative elements in such different ways? O Supreme Eternal, kindly explain this to me. Good question. Purport. Lord Krishna thoroughly explained in the previous chapter that Vedic knowledge is not meant for sense gratification, but for liberation from material bondage. Now Uddhava presents some intermediate questions that must be answered so the path of liberation will be clear. Different philosophers have historically disagreed over the exact number of material elements, about the existence and non-existence of particular external objects, and about the existence of the soul itself. The Jnanakanda section of the Vedas aims at liberation through analytic understanding of the material world and of the spirit soul as a transcendental element beyond matter. Ultimately, the Supreme Lord himself stands above all elements and maintains them by his personal potency. Uddhava mentions in numerical terms different methodologies of various sages, citing first the Lord's own opinion, the word ayushmam, or possessing eternal form, is significant in this regard. Since Lord Krishna is eternal, he possesses all knowledge of past, present, and future, and is thus the original and supreme philosopher. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the different analytic approaches mentioned by Sri Uddhava are actually not contradictory, since they are different methods of categorizing the same reality. Atheistic speculation on reality does not recognize the existence of God. Consequently, it is a worthless attempt to explain the truth. The Lord himself empowers different living entities to speculate and speak on the reality in different ways. The actual reality, however, is the Lord himself who will now speak to Sri Uddhava. Om Jnanatam Randisha Gananjana Salakaya Chakshur Mithamina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Vanchakopa Trivishcha Kripa Sindhu Devacha Patitano Pavane Bio Vaishvaya Namo Namaha. So the last chapter, chapter 21, talked about Karmakanda and its benefits or the issues with Karmakanda. This chapter 22 is really talking about Jnanakanda. So we move from Karmakanda to Jnanakanda. And Jnana means distinguishing matter from spirit. And part of that explanation of understanding matter is understanding all the material elements. So once one understands all the material elements, one can also perceive the independent existence of the soul as distinct from matter. So that's the idea. If you understand everything material world, you understand how the jiva spirit soul differs from those material elements. Therefore, that's the first step in transcendental knowledge. This is also, of course, called the Bhagavatam Sankhya philosophy. Since Sankhya is described by Lord Kapila, and this, you know, there's many different aspects of it. The third and fourth canto talk a lot about the material elements in the Bhagavatam. In 1.3.10, it's explained, the sum total of the creative elements is explicitly explained in the system of Sankhya philosophy. Sankhya philosophy is generally called metaphysics by the European scholars. We often think of metaphysics meaning the study of the nature of reality. So part of that nature of reality is, what is this material world? The etymological meaning of Sankhya is that which explains very lucidly by analysis of the material elements. 1.3.10. So, in other words, by understanding analytically, breaking down all the material elements, understanding them, then one is able to make a clear distinction between what is spirit and what is matter. That's the object of jnana. Now, of course, devotees, we have some element of jnana. We certainly want to understand the material nature, understand how the material world is working. We want to understand clearly how the spirit soul differs from matter, but we don't so much engage in this kind of in-depth, you know, breakdown discussion of the material elements, except as it's presented in the Bhagavatam by the Lord himself for our benefit. So we get what we can from this to try to understand better the relationship of the soul and matter. Now, Uddhava's specific question is kind of interesting. It's one that you might have asked yourself. I mean, I've actually have wondered this sometimes reading, because you do see, even within our scriptures, different descriptions of matter, the material elements, and sometimes they're listed in very different ways, and I'm going to show some of those in a moment. So it's a legitimate question. Why do we see these different enumerations? Which one's really right? Why are there different counts and configurations of the material elements? And it's explained that these differences really come from two sources. One is there's different descriptions by both sages and Vaishnavas, and also by material philosophers who are just looking at it in different ways of perceiving the material world, different ways of enumerating and coming up with these different categories. But it's interesting, there are also different descriptions even within our Vedic scriptures, even within the Srimad Bhagavatam and Prabhupada's purports. You can see a little bit different ways of looking at these elements. Now, the most frequent one you're going to find, and Prabhupada mentions it many, many times, and it's so actually broken down, usually not so much in a single verse, but over several verses. Usually you see 24 material elements. That's most common. In the Bhagavad Gita's introduction, Prabhupada says the 24 elements within this material world is a temporary manifestation. And even some of the Bhagavatam verses, 10.13.52, says all the Vishnumurtis were surrounded by the opulences headed by Anima City, by mystic potencies headed by Aja, here's the important part, and by the 24 elements of this creation material world headed by Mahatattva. So we often see this, 24 elements of material world. But there are a number of other descriptions. Yeah, even Bhagavad Gita, right in the beginning, in chapter 7, says earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. These together constitute my 8 separated material energies. And Bhagavatam 3.9.36, although I'm not easily knowable by the conditioned soul, you've known me today because you know my personality is not constituted of anything material, and specifically not of the 5 gross and 3 subtle elements. So one of the most basic descriptions we get are these 8 elements. Basically the 5 gross elements and the 3 subtle elements. So obviously this is a subcategory of some of these larger groupings. Bhagavatam 4.7.37. By our material senses, we simply perceive the cosmic manifestation. But you are beyond the 5 elements. You are the 6th. So here we see 5 elements, and Krishna is the 6th. Now we go to 7. Bhagavatam 3.26.50. The Supreme Personality of Godhead and His feature of Garbhadakshaya Vishnu entered within each universe. Accompanying him were all 7 primary elements, the 5 material elements, the total energy, Mahatattva, and the false ego. Another way of categorizing it. It would have been mentioned 16. Bhagavatam 4.29.74. The 5 sense objects, 5 sense organs, 5 knowledge-acquiring senses, and the mind are the 16 material expansions. And we go to 25. 3.26.15, Bhagavatam, Saguna Brahman, which means with qualities, is described by the Sankhya system of philosophy as consisting of 25 elements, which are the 24 previous, including the time factor, past, present, future. So sometimes the time factor is considered one of the elements. Now here's one where we can get up to 30. Here's an additional 5. I don't think this one was even mentioned. Some say there are five groups of five. One group is sense objects, one is the five elements, one is the five sense working, sense organs requiring knowledge, another is senses for working, so you got those 20, or whatever. And the fifth group is the five deities who control these divisions. So that adds another five. In a lecture, Bhagavad Gita 13.6, Prabhupada says, above the 24 elements, there is time, kala, time element, and also representation of the Supreme Lord, and above this there is God. So 26 total. So you know, you can see how you can put these in different ways and get different counts. Now, what we see most often are the 24 material elements. The five gross elements of earth, water, fire, air, and ether. The five knowledge-acquiring senses, eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and skin. The five objects of senses, sight, sound, smell, touch, and taste. Then the five working senses, voice, legs, hands, anus, and genitals. Then there are three subtle elements, mind, intelligence, false ego. That takes us to 23. The four sets of five, the three subtle elements. And then the unmanifest stage of the modes of nature, pradhana. Now, sometimes it's called prakriti, which is, I guess, the manifested modes of nature, or sometimes mahatattva. So you'll see the pradhana, prakriti, mahatattva. Some description of the totality of material nature or material energy. So those are the 24 you see most often in the Bhagavatam and Prabhupada's writing. Then the other two, sometimes mentioned, are Krishna and the Jiva, who may be found within this material world, although are not actually made of the material elements. Although they are independent, they are not matter. The Jiva, of course, is pure spiritual. Krishna is spiritual. But sometimes they're mentioned as part of the mix. So, and those two are mentioned here. Now also, in this verse, that's 26, how do they get to 28? Okay? The other two basically are expanding this the modes of nature or the prakriti into the three modes of nature. So instead of just saying prakriti, it's saying goodness, passion, ignorance, the three modes of nature, so that adds two more, right? Three modes instead of just saying prakriti or just saying pradhana. So by breaking down the larger category, you get 28. Okay? Now that that's clear. Yeah, although the three modes are actually manifest, I know, right? Yeah. So I'm not absolutely clear, but that and living entity and God Krishna.
That makes
28. Yeah. That's as far as I can tell. I may not be absolutely right on that, but that's what it seems to be saying in these verses, particularly in today's verse, the way it's broken down. So, in Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura's purport, he says three gunas means prakriti. I mean, three gunas because said that only through the three modes of prakriti arise the two types of mahatattva. So basically saying that that's what you get, the three gunas are there. And then in the purport to the next verse, Vishnu says, the elements are included in other elements, as explained further in two verses. Because the elements enter each other, they may be counted in their previous or latter condition. Some say the effects are in the cause, so they count the cause, the previous elements. Others say the cause is in the effect, so they count the effect, the later elements. Thus, there'll be either less or more elements in counting. I hope that was completely clear to everyone. Cause and effect. Depends on which way you're counting. In other words, you know, it's just different ways of grouping. So, in itself, I think the purport here is that it's not that important. Whether we say they're 26 or 28 or 24, we get the idea. In other words, as long as we understand what these elements are, how they're working in the material world, it depends on what we're counting and whether we're expanding one grouping, we're expanding into the modes of nature, whatever. You're going to come up a little bit differently. So what are the important points in understanding Sankhya or understanding Jnana? Two important points. One is that the Jiva, the spirit soul, is distinct from all the material elements, and that we have an independent spiritual existence that's, of course, manifest fully in the spiritual world and only manifest partially within this material world because we are so covered and influenced by these other 24 or 26 elements. And the other important point is, of course, Krishna, God, who is totally independent of the material energy and all of these elements, although he is the creator and controller. But he is not directly in contact. So how is this? We know Krishna simultaneously controls, creates material nature, but he remains aloof. He pervades everything in this material world through his energies, yet he remains the complete whole, because his energies are non-different at full potencies, yet he is apart from those energies. That's, of course, described in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, text 4 and 5. Krishna says, by me and my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. And yet everything that is created does not rest in me. Behold my mystic opulence. Although I am the maintainer of all living entities, and although I am everywhere, I am not part of this cosmic manifestation, for myself is the very source of creation. We often think of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as being the primary great personality, incarnation of Krishna, Krishna himself, who enunciated the principle of Achintabheda Tattva, the simultaneously oneness and difference of God and his creation, and God and the Jesus.
Well, but here, actually writing Bhagavad Gita, we see Achintabheda Tattva.
So it's explained, right? That Krishna is both simultaneously part of the creation, but yet he is separate, but yet he is aloof. So, you know, we should never discount the depth of Bhagavad Gita. Although we say it's our primary scripture, I mean, so much is contained right there, including the sort of this little nutshell of the entire philosophy, which is Veda Veda Tattva. Prabhupada gives a nice explanation, a purport to that. He says, just as sunshine is spread all over the universe, the energy of the Lord is spread all over the creation, and everything is resting in his energy. Yet one should not conclude that because he has spread all over, he has lost his personal existence. To refute such an argument, the Lord says, I am everywhere, everything is in me, but I am still aloof. For example, a king heads the government, which is but a manifestation of the king's energy. The different governmental departments are nothing but the energies of the king, and each department is resting on the king's power. But still, one cannot expect the king to be present in every department personally. So he runs the departments through the expansion of his energy, his influence, his deputing departmental heads, in the same way Krishna runs this material world a little bit remotely like that. He deputes the demigods and others to manage things. He sets it up, he creates it, but yet then kind of steps back and it goes on. So we do not understand Krishna's position and our own position due to a lack of spiritual perspective. We don't see this working. In the Krishna book, Prabhupada says, but in fact, he is the overseer of this material creation, and while remaining unaffected by the material modes of nature, he creates, maintains, and dissolves this whole cosmic manifestation. We wrongly look upon Krishna and Balaram as ordinary human beings, just as whirling men see the world around, see the whole world whirling around them. Okay? You all remember as kids, you probably don't do this anymore, but kids like to spin around, right? What happens? They get them to make themselves dizzy, and everything is spinning, right? Maybe you still experience this in some circumstances, you know, but is the whole world actually spinning? No. It is the person that is spinning, and they create this illusion that the material world is spinning around them. This is a very nice analogy that everybody can understand and appreciate, because we've all experienced that. So we see things in a certain way due to that limited perception or that distorted perception, which we call illusion. So that illusion is that we think this material world is all in all. We think we are the enjoyers, we are the controllers of this, and that there's nothing higher in control, because we simply do not see that. Prabhupada also gave the example of like a little ant. They're making a little anthill, and they've got their whole little world going on. You're standing over them looking at it, and thinking what they're doing is so insignificant, but their whole world is there, and they don't even see you, right? I mean, unless you bother them, you can be standing above, and they have no idea you're even there. So it's like that. We're busy in our little world, in this our activity of material energy. We're not even aware of the demigods, what to speak of Krishna, that God is overseeing, controlling everything. I'm kind of waiting for us to look up and see him. So, anyway, this is some explanation of why there are these differences, why there are scriptural differences, why different sages will actually explain things in different ways due to the different perception. And then the other thing that's mentioned is the materialistic version. You know, that materialistic scientists, philosophers will explain things in a very different way. That's a whole other class, and we're not going to discuss that now. It was kind of summarized in one sentence in the purport today. They said, atheistic speculation on reality does not recognize the existence of God. Consequently, it is a worthless attempt to explain the truth. So since it's worthless, we won't spend any more time on atheistic explanation today. I will give one example, though. Scientists do not even accept the element of ether or space. They say ether, they say, well, what is it? It's just the absence of an element. So they might accept earth, water, fire, and they won't call them those, but they accept that, you know, there's different types of matter, different, they call it different states of matter. You know, there's transformation from, you know, something in a solid state to a liquid state to a gaseous state like that. And of course they understand fire, but they're not even quite clear. Is fire matter? Is it energy? What's energy? What's matter? A lot of confusion. It got more confusing when Einstein said, well, really, they're kind of the same. You know, one's a transformation of the other, which is true. In other words, we talk about material energy. We don't say there's matter and there's energy. The Vedic system says it's material energy. It is all a type of energy, which is actually what Einstein said. So Einstein was a little bit intelligent. Most of them are not quite so intelligent as Einstein, and they're completely confused between what is matter, what is energy. They don't understand the concept of ether. Without ether, actually, sound could not travel. There wouldn't be any sound, but that's another point. So we want to study the material world from the Vedic perspective, from the perspective of the Srimad Bhagavatam and our acharyas. So why? Well, we need to understand a little bit of how we get entangled in this material world so we can become untangled. In other words, we want to know what's going on with us. We don't want to be like the whirling person who's just thinking the whole world's spinning around and there's no clue as to reality. So the Bhagavatam, in the back a few chapters ago, in the ninth chapter, there was, we've gone over this a couple of times, actually, different understandings of material nature, and Bhagavatam keeps bringing it back at different points. You know, we heard it back with Kapila, then it keeps repeating, because it takes us a while to get it, you know, to understand what is this material world, because we're so connected, we're so attached, you know, we're so caught up in material energy. So basically, the unmanifested neutral stage of material energy is called pradhana, and it becomes agitated by the glance of Krishna, which creates the mahatattva and the 24 elements. And the mahatattva is also sometimes called a product of the three modes of nature or the effect of the three modes of nature. Again, you know, depending on whether you're looking at cause and effect. And then the universe is described in the 11th chapter as strung on a thread of the mahatattva. And through the interactions of the three modes, all of existence is created. Sometimes manifest, sometimes unmanifest, but actually, Prakriti or material energy is eternal. It's always there. It may be manifest in particular forms, then it becomes unmanifest, but it's always there. So, I had a few purports probably explain that. I don't think I'm going to have time to read all that. But basic idea is that it is real, it's not false, as Mayavadis explain. It is eternal, manifest, and unmanifest. And Bhagavad Gita 9.8 says, the whole cosmic order is under me. Under my will, it is automatically manifested again and again, and under my will, it's annihilated at the end. Okay? So, through the Mahatattva, basically that we're thrown into this material world, and the Mahatattva we undergo material existence. And that creation and interactions come about through ahankara, false ego. False ego is the point when the jiva enters this material world, at contact point is ahankara. Because without false ego, we could not stay in this material world. We would not be under the illusion that this material world is a place for us, that we are these bodies, we are these minds, and that we are the controllers of all of this. Otherwise, we'd be in the spiritual world. So to be able to be in this material world and actually accept this illusion, the false ego is born. And the false ego, interacting with modes of nature, creates everything. Okay? Prabhupada says, the first emanation from the Supreme Lord for material creation is Mahatattva. The interaction of material modes is the cause of false identification with the sense that a living being is made of material elements. This false ego is the cause of identifying the body and mind with the soul proper. Material resources and the capacity and knowledge to work are generated in the second term of creation called Mahatattva. So, the soul has false identification with matter. Bhishma Chakravarti Thakura says in one purport, the total mind of the creation, which manifested Prajapati Brahma, who identifies with that as his body, since the economy of creation is such that no material body is created until some living entity wants to inhabit it. Okay? So what's the actual reason, the actual cause of creation? The jiva, right? The jiva's desire to be in this material world is the cause of the creation of the material world. So we have come to this material world due to our desires to be separate from Krishna, and we have to inhabit a body. So then the material world is manifested due to our desires. And then we become covered by material energy. Real knowledge is lost. The ahankara causes identification with the body, but we are not servants of Krishna. And this illusion is called Hrida Granti, the knot in the heart. It binds us to this material world, and it only can be unbound. Of course, it says that you can only become unbound by someone else who is. If you're bound, you cannot untie yourself, basically. Only somebody who's unbound or untied can untie you, right? You can struggle and struggle, and your hands are tied behind your back. I've never experienced it, really, but, you know, apparently you can understand it. But somebody else comes along behind you, and they can untie the knots. That's the spiritual master. That's the guru. Krishna sends the spiritual master to unbind us in this material world. And then, when that knot is cut, the Hrida Granti, the knot in the heart, the false ego, is cut. Illusion is destroyed, and thus we begin to see things as they are. We see the material world, we see the Mahatattva, we see all this material energy. We see ourselves as our real self as separate from that, as spirit soul, and we see Krishna. We see God as being the supreme controller, enjoyer of it all. And then we enter into bhakti, devotional service. Devotional service then becomes the source of real knowledge. The jnanis try to approach spiritual realization through somehow figuring it all out, acquiring all this knowledge, distinguishing, no, that's not, that's material, that's spiritual, somehow getting to the position of God. But you cannot really, through jnana, just through intellectual endeavor, you cannot come to bhakti. Right? It's not possible. You cannot come to the realization that you are the servant, the pure spirit soul, who's eternal servant of the Lord Krishna, through mental speculation or intellectual endeavor. It's only through when bhakti is bestowed upon the jiva, upon the living entity, that true knowledge can come about. Srimad Bhagavatam 127 says, by rendering devotional service unto the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. So this knowledge, true knowledge, some knowledge can come about through jnana. One can understand Brahman, basically. One can understand spirit by this process. One understand that he is spirit soul, separate from this material creation. But true understanding of Krishna and our relationship with God does not come about in that way, but comes about through bhakti, through devotional service. And it's that process of devotional service, which of course is bestowed upon us through the guru, the acharyas, the line of Siddhic succession, then one can come to the platform of devotional service and true knowledge, complete understanding and knowledge of Krishna. Okay? So this is all interesting subject matter to understand this material world, but the devotee sees it in terms of understanding it to get out of it. And also, another perspective is understanding this is all coming from Krishna. It's pretty wonderful. I mean, Krishna is all beautiful, mighty, and glorious creations. You know, they rise from but a spark of my splendor. So Krishna, by just a little bit of his energy, a fraction of his energy, created all of this. So that's pretty amazing. So that's how the devotee sees material energy. And also the devotee sees material energy as this is all coming from Krishna. I am part and parcel of Krishna. I am Krishna's servant. Therefore, I use everything that's material world in Krishna's service. So for one who is most advanced in knowledge, a pure devotee actually does not see difference. We do and we don't. You see that, yes, this is material energy, this is spiritual energy, but because everything can be seen and utilized in the service of the Lord by the pure devotee, that distinction becomes less, becomes not so important. Because everything is Krishna's energy, and everything is used to serve and please Krishna. Okay? Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. So if anyone can further enlighten us on the subject matter or can clear up some of the confusion I created, we'll take one of the ladies over here and then go back to Bhadra. I'll go ahead all the way over in the back corner.
Hare Krishna Prabhu.
Wait for the microphone.
Hare Krishna Prabhu.
Hare Bol.
I'm Brother Prija Devidasi. And I'm in charge of the kids to teach science to them. So, I'm chemist. I have a master in chemistry. And I teach in chemistry 10 years around the world. And I have my master in nuclear magnetic resonance that this thing is what's created based on the knowledge of Albert Einstein, actually. So,
say that again.
Albert Einstein.
What did you... I missed the last thing you said.
All the stuff. The past one. I'm studying in Switzerland nuclear magnetic resonance, and all the knowledge that we have is thanks of the knowledge of Albert Einstein, actually, and a lot of people around him, but mainly Albert Einstein. So, even the scientists didn't know, when they didn't know about the Vedic system and all this stuff, in the case of Albert Einstein, that he knows a lot about Vedic system and a lot about the science of the soul. Because if you read a lot about, and I'm reading 13 books about Albert Einstein, and 13, I saw many series that was published by Nat Geo and all this stuff about Albert Einstein, you notice that he didn't was confused at all. Actually, his mind was so brilliant, and he was a creation of Krishna too. And the thing is, when you try to put in words the science that is in everything, and when you try to put numbers on these things, it's very difficult. Because why? Because even when you are making devotional service, it's very hard to try to understand this kind of thing. Because our mind is very, very low to try to understand the science that is between all the magnificent creation of Krishna, even when we have a 13 particle, and every human being have a 13 particle. And even, so Albert Einstein has this thing in her heart too. And when you read the text that was written by Albert Einstein, you know that he has a lot of Vedic knowledge, a lot. So that, since my point of view, that is very wrong for sure. So Albert Einstein knows about the Vedic system. And one thing, he's German. And he was a German that refused to be German. And actually, he studied in Switzerland. And the point in this thing is, If you notice, actually, all the messages that have Hitler and all the stuff, he knows already about the Vedic system too. So the point in this thing is the German people, and I heard sometime that actually all the people that there was in the Kurukshetra and the surviving people of the Arjuna family, they moved to Europe.
I didn't hear that.
No, I heard this thing, and I read in something, but I didn't remember where it was.
Okay.
So I think, actually, that the roots of the science, or at least the European science, are Vedic. Because I'm already studied there. So I'm in between these things. I'm a very new Hare Krishna movement. I only have 4 years, actually.
Okay. Can you, just for time, can you make your point? Can you summarize here quickly?
The thing is, even when you make devotional service, but if you're not humble, you're not able to understand anything about Krishna. That's the point.
I think we can all agree with that, Hare Krishna. Yeah. You know, it's one of those points where, I mean, I know you said a lot of things. I can't really, you know, capture and respond to all of it. But yes, there have been those, both within India and scholars, and also Western scholars, certainly have some knowledge. I mean, certainly there is some knowledge there, because Krishna is the source of knowledge for everyone. And obviously there was, as I was saying, Einstein began to, you know, he had some clue. He did have some understanding of what was going on. And many scientists actually, who deeply, deeply get into, especially physics and that, they understand that there must be something more, because they can't come to a final conclusion. So, yeah, I think there are pious people, they're intelligent people, they come, and not just we're Hare Krishna devotees, and they come to some understandings of the truth. But that truth is usually partial or incomplete, and therefore we need to basically find those people and help complete their understanding by giving them the science of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Anyway, thank you. I think Badra was first here, and then we'll go back.
Can you elaborate the real Sankhya philosophy and there is the atheist? Is that there are two Sankhya?
Yes, there's an atheistic version, and then there's Kapila and the Vedic version. Yeah.
Can you little bit say about it? What is the difference?
Well, I'm not expert at that at all. But of course, basically the sort of atheistic Sankhya, which I'm not sure who the components are. I think certain Indians. What is it?
His name is also Kapila.
Oh, there's another Kapila. That's why it's confusing. Two Kapilas. Yeah. Atheistic Kapila and incarnation of Krishna Kapila. All right, the atheistic version, as far as I understand, just basically leaves Krishna out. You know, it talks about the material elements, interactions of elements, but as though they just, you know, I don't know, we don't study this philosophy, but as though they more or less appear on their own and interact without any outside greater, you know, greater influence or supreme person, where our Kapilas, the Vaishnava, the incarnation of Krishna's Kapilas, his explanation, which is given in the Bhagavatam, breaks down, talks about all the material elements in their interaction, but always with Krishna as the background. Always that they're just coming from Krishna. Krishna is controlling all of this. It's coming about under his will. And the real understanding is to help us understand, as I was saying, how all of this works in relationship with Krishna, how the jiva is separate from the material elements. The material elements are all there. The jiva is separate. And Krishna is also separate, not influenced by them. So basically, it's a... you know, it's the difference of whether God is in the picture, whether God is in control, and whether things are coming from God. You know, just like there's so many different philosophies. Many of them are mentioned, like Karma Mimamsa. I mean, even Krishna preached Karma Mimamsa, which basically Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, who sometimes puts things in very succinctly, said Karma Mimamsa is atheism that includes transmigration of the soul. Reincarnation. Okay? Karma and reincarnation, but atheistic. But it's just a mechanical process. So there's so many different philosophies that can begin to approach some truth or have, you know, some intelligence behind them. But don't really get at Krishna's supreme controller, creator, maintainer. Okay.
I was interested in Mataji's poem, but the whole idea of distinction between the devotional practitioner and this non-devotional who are very expertly trying to analyze and promoting the be logical, you will be free from pain or whatever the obstacle in life. But in practical reality, this is not proven. Because in exercise of their day-to-day function, there is always something required of willpower, of consistently persistence and abstinence. These two functions of the willpower cannot come without having a good sadhana in Krishna consciousness.
The two are what? Persistence and abstinence?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Without these two, nobody can be peaceful.
Uh-huh.
They can be very analytical.
That's very interesting. I just want, is that somewhere in scripture or is that something you've just...
No, this is from the Vaishurja Kadamini of Baladev Vidyabhushan Thakur.
I'm sorry.
Baladev Vidyabhushan Thakur. Baladev was...
Baladev. Okay, yeah. Okay, yeah.
His commentary. So my point is, even a devotee are not humble in the beginning, but they're chanting. Eventually, the power of bhakti is so powerful, it will purify that person. Yeah. And somebody may be analytically very genius, but eventually futile, because he will not be able to get out of the material condition.
That's a very good point. I remember when I was in college, you know, I changed my major every semester because I didn't really, trying to look for something, not really find anything that was satisfying, true. But the one semester I was a philosophy major, briefly. And the joke was that if you wanted to find all the philosophy professors who gave all these big colloquia and seminars and spoke so eloquently, you went down to the Shamrock Bar. That's where they all hung out, you know, which is your point. In other words, they may have so much intelligence, but they're not really getting any nectar, any juice from that, and so therefore they have to indulge in so many different things. The abstinence from sense gratification wasn't there, and so how do they really advance? What do they really get from it? How does it really mean anything in their lives? And that's, I think that's the real difference. You know, it's the idea of jnana and vijnana. It's just this, you can have knowledge, but realized knowledge, that creates the transformation of the heart, the change of heart, where, you know, where there's a reality of spiritual life. Nice point. Oh, Tim Maskini? And I think you get the last word here. Okay.
I can speak for myself, but I think that this might be the experience with many devotees, is that this process of Samkhya hasn't played a very big role in my development as a devotee, and I'm often kind of just wondering what to do when it comes up in discussion or in Prabhupada's book. It's oftentimes quite difficult for me to relate to. And,
I understand what you're saying. I feel that way too sometimes, and sometimes I think it's very analytic parts of it. I mean, honestly speaking, I think myself, maybe others, we read through them dutifully because it's Bhagavatam or Prabhupada or whatever, but, you know, perhaps it's a difficult subject matter and doesn't always seem that it relates so much. I mean, I take a lot of these things on faith, you know, faith that this, it's the words of the Bhagavatam, it's transcendental, it's spiritual, and it's going to have benefit and great power in just hearing them, like, you know, like the verses that we read, these Sanskrit verses, the basic enumeration, different ways of 13, 16, and 12 elements, but because it's the Bhagavatam and it has such power of impacting the heart, we know that this is going to be beneficial. So, you know, so we read these things, we try to understand, and one thing that I found is, I think many years ago, if I would have read this, I would have been completely bewildered, you know, and as you kind of get a little experience, you know, and you hear these things enough times, they start to make sense. So I say, okay, here's the 24, I get that, and like that. So it just, I think we just have to take it in that spirit, you know. These are things that we may not immediately perceive the benefit, but we will eventually understand it more and more. We put it in its perspective. You know, and it maybe it's not going to be a main focus of our study, you know, but it's there. Yeah. Okay. Thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.